This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Jermaine B, and this is Raise Your Game on our regular Motivational Monday. It's true when they say we don't stop learning our entire lives. We learn formally through proper syllabus in schools and classrooms, as well as through our various learning experiences. Today we have Zaleha Kyrene and Jason Bork, who will be sharing about their book on lessons beyond the classroom. This book is set to do the following. Chase you to challenge any prisons of beliefs you may not even know you're trapped within. Sometimes the supposed facts we are fed are too good to check, so we don't. And your life will change for reasons beyond your control with the mindset of you can't change the direction of the winds, but at least you will learn how to realign your sails. Let's hear it from both Zaleha and Jason this morning. Welcome to the show.
Morning. Thank you so much for having us here in the studio.
Good morning, Jermaine. Thanks for that.
So first things first, how did the book come about? What was the inspiration behind Lessons Beyond the Classroom?
Yeah, it actually was born out of a simple need to provide presence to the dozen odd nieces and nephews that we have between us. So there's always a present to buy, and they're kind of getting to an age now where they're beyond toys. So we always like to provide, literature in some form. So, we found ourselves, as usual, myself in the self-help section within bookstores and Zell in the chiclet section, and I just couldn't find anything that necessarily hit the mark. There are a lot of great authors out there, very credible MBA, PhD type authors that are writing, the 400-600 page self-help books, which are great. Now, they have their place. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know I like reading a lot about, the theory behind these things. But sometimes there's quite a strong angle, whether it be a cultural, a political, or even a religious aspect that some of these books tend to drift into. And I just felt as though that tended to lose the neutrality of the message. And it almost felt as though that these people are trying to rally support or a view. So we thought, well, if we can't find anything, why not do it ourselves?
Mm. Why not create it, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
Anything to add from your side, Zaleha?
Well, other than trying to leave a good legacy to our younger generation, it is hoped that this book will kind of reduce or pretty much eradicate any upcoming frustrations and conflicts in day-to-day lives that we sometimes face. Mm-hmm. So it's like a car manual that that you put in your dashboard from time to time. You might not read it now, mm-hmm. but should you come to that situation where you might need like an advice or something, mm-hmm. then you can actually refer to it and say, oh, okay, so maybe this will help me paint a better picture on the situations that I'm in.
And how did both of you come together to write this book?
Okay, so it all started, we were in China actually at the time, through my work in the oil and gas industry, Zell was doing the commute from KL to the Shandong province. There was a little city there. And so it became, in time, it was a very rewarding experience, but also a very frustrating one, given we weren't in one of the, tier one cities. So I think it almost put us in the mood, in the right frame of mind, perhaps almost to get a little bit, off-centre to write something of this nature. So that's my recollection of it.
Yeah, and to help speed things up, I came back from the Shanghai International Book Festival at the time, and I've always been actively involved in writing. This is my second book. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to China and I told Jason, maybe, let's get together and, start something. So yeah, now we have Lessons Beyond the Classroom.
Nice. So, how would you describe the book Lessons Beyond the Classroom, and what does it cover essentially?
Everything from day-to-day lives, from finance to personal relationships to career to family, things that we encounter every day, and the normal conventional approaches that people have taken in the past, and how sometimes those things need to be questioned or challenged or suited to our situation. So those are the things that we would like to approach. And coming from an Asian environment growing up, mm-hmm. and Jason growing up in Australia, so we thought it would be a good way to compile notes and, start writing something.
Yeah. Do you all find it a bit challenging to come to a balance between, the Eastern and the Western approach, for example?
I think that goes to the point why it was we felt comfortable to collaborate, despite coming from different, well, not quite sides, but different parts of the planet, i.e. the Western mindset, you know, Southeast Asian. We found, though, that we shared a lot of the same values, and you know, that's why, you know, we are partners, you know, from a life perspective too. So I think as a result of that, it was almost refreshing from that perspective. And then so raising topics, and mind you, you know, I think it's interesting to note how the topics came about. We're both in the habit of keeping journals, and I don't mean, you know, the ones we kept as in high school about the high school sweetheart, but, you know, our day-to-day journals, you know, the A4 page to a day. And, you know, if ever we heard something, a phrase, a statement in a meeting that just sounded great, something we may have read, we're in the habit of writing these down now. So this has been happening for all our working careers. And we literally went back, you know, to 1999 in my case, and just started to document all the things that we'd written. And that became the early phase of the blueprint for what then became the rest of the book. And mind you, we had one of the biggest challenges was working out what to retain and what to leave out. You know, there's so much more material, I'm sure.
Yeah. And they're all short stories in a way, like
anecdotes.
Yeah, anecdotes. So what is the goal of the book, and who will be your target audience for this?
Wow. A lot of people can find themselves relating the topics that we've approached from the launch that we've had in January last year. After hearing feedback from all the readers, it covers so many situations that... Because when I first wrote this book, it was a compilation of seeing or hearing people say, man, I wish someone had taught me that, you know, taught me this in school, or I wish I had known this earlier. So covering from situations where a lot of frustrations were seen. A couple of months ago, we hear so many financial setbacks among the youngsters, how relationships were not, you know, successful. So this book, it doesn't answer the questions, but it helps you engage that internal debate that we have from time to time, and to iron out communication breakdowns that you have, whether it be work-related, family-related, or relationship-related.
Okay. And of all the 22 interesting topics, which would you say appeal most to the both of you personally?
By far, communication and social media.
Media in moderation.
I can write books just on those topics on themselves, but, you know, for people who get to pick up this book, I guess we'll get the gist. You know, with regard to communication, in the book, I decided to use the comparison of how it is that Malaysians tend to drive. I'm not going to, you know, say anything bad about that, but I just find it interesting that, you know, there are some very expensive cars on the road, you know, $400,000-$500,000 and beyond, and yet for some reason indicators don't seem to work. I'm being facetious, of course they do, but it's the people behind the controls that I think are not working. And, you know, we've got the ability, the indicator is the means we have on the road to let our fellow drivers know what we're doing, and that's the equivalent of communication, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, we use that and draw that back into the verbal communication that we all, you know, go through, and a lot of the frustration that, you know, I tend to see and experience with one of the more habitual problems, people just not letting other people finish a sentence. So how on earth can you know what points it is you're meant to be discussing? And so soon, when that happens, soon people are arguing about the fact that they don't think the other person's listening, and all of a sudden nothing comes of it. So it's just those small little examples that I think the message there is there's a lot more effort, I think, required on everybody's part in the world of certainly, you know, communication in that regard.
And still on communication, I just see endless frustrations among couples. Oh, you should know this by now. We've been together for 5-10 years. Humans are not mind readers. But again, coming back to the, if I can say it, Asian environment of growing up, you're so afraid to confront things. Oh, what if he gets offended? If I say, what if she gets offended? This whole kecil hati situation, it's really difficult to tread on. And it's not just relationships. At work, you know, some people are so afraid to ask the boss, how do I go about, you know, approaching this promotion? If the boss doesn't know that you're interested, How can you be shortlisted for your career advancement? So instead of wishing, people should start speaking their minds so they get closer to what they're aiming for. And the other topic that we like is, of course, social media in moderation. It was funny because a couple of weeks ago, evening slots on BFM, it was two of your anchors who were actually having a go at people who go to concerts and were watching the concerts from the small screen up there. So I wasn't the only one who thought like that. Yeah. And social media moderation, our car just got banged the other day from a guy who was busy checking out his social media feeds.
It happens a lot, actually. Like, it's true when you say that people interact a lot more digitally now than face-to-face.
On social media, and again, because this book attempts to come through a filter of the reasonable person, you've got to acknowledge the benefits that it's created. It's connected us in ways we never thought possible. Mm-hmm. I get to speak to relatives overseas I probably never, you know, would have. Anything taken to the extreme can start to cause problems, like our bumper bar. And fortunately for that gentleman, he came out and apologised, acknowledging what he was doing and, you know, things are okay. But, you know, I just feel like social media has given people permission to grab their top drawer, open the window, and just dump everything out on the planet, you know, and there's no filters these
days.
Yes,
that's very true. It speaks a lot about them, actually. So when we come back, Zaliha and Jason share more about the financial topics covered in their book, as well as some tips and tricks when it comes to financial planning, mm-hmm. as something we're not taught regularly about in the classroom. This is Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Balanced Frank Medium, BFM 89.9.
Good morning, this is Raise Your Game, and we've been speaking to Zaliha and Jason, who are authors of Lessons Beyond the Classroom. Early on, they speak about how did they come to write this book and what inspired them. So now let's look a little bit more into the financial topics covered in their book, as well as some tips and tricks when it comes to financial planning. Welcome back, Zaliha and Jason.
Thank you.
After going through the topics briefly, I personally find the financial topics rather interesting. Be wary of financial advisors and bank lenders. How much money is enough? So I must say we don't get educated well enough when it comes to financial planning, and simple tips certainly help. Can you provide a summary and the intent of those topics?
Yeah, I'll start off with the whole being wary, I think was the term we used of financial planners and bank lenders. And again, you know, when writing this, I almost felt like, geez, I hope my own financial planner and, you know, bank manager isn't reading this, because I'm sure I'm going to offend. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the truth is they are just human beings like you and I trying to put bread on the table. It's as simple as that. And naturally and obviously there are some great financial planners out there that consistently get you a great return, beating the market, and that's great. You should hold on to them. Honestly, but unfortunately, just like with anything, you know, the entire industry, it doesn't necessarily work to that standard. And so the lesson, the bit of advice, the thought that we try to get across here is there is nothing more liberating and safe, if you will, than trying to find out the truth for yourself. And in this case, educating yourself about how to, you know, try to manage your money. And listen, some of us are not financially savvy. I mean, even in relationships, sometimes one partner will novate off the accountability and responsibility for managing that. And that's fine, that works. But certainly as a younger person, the advice is try to have a bit more than a basic understanding of how it is that you can, obviously make your money, but how to store it, and most importantly, how it is that you multiply it, because that's ultimately what it should all be about. Preserving capital is key. Multiplying it, is utopia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in school, we have this art stream or science stream or finance stream. You have princip account or accounting subject to take, but what about those who do not pursue that that major? And there's no such thing as personal budgeting when it comes to the lower or the secondary or the primary education syllabus. And I think that needs to be looked into seriously. It should be introduced. Last year, 294,000 bankruptcy cases, 70% of them 35 to 45, all because of cars and higher purchases and credit cards and personal loans. And the most common issues that I see right now, couples getting married regardless of race and religion, bombarded with a hefty wedding bills just to appease other people. Mm-hmm. And they're so afraid to say no because, oh, if your parents are not happy with it, you're not going to get the blessing in life. But these people are already starting their lives with debt. And something needs to be looked at because 75%, 35 to 45, that's your most productive age in the working lifetime. Mm-hmm. So that needs to be looked into.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, just over casual conversations I had with a couple of friends, and sadly, you know, in our 30s, and I would say about 80% don't actually own their own property. And the reason is, well, I don't earn enough. So whatever I earn, I spend. That's all that we have left, you know. There's no more money for property. There's no more money for any savings whatsoever. So that's actually really sad.
And just on that point, I mean, you know, things do change with respect to my parents, working class at the time, but, you know, they bought their first house for $7,000. This is in Melbourne, Australia. And they paid that off within 6 months. Now, there is no way to know that the equivalent job that they had today would be able to buy you this similar sort of property, you know, they're 20 kilometres out of town. So we need to acknowledge that wages, for example, have certainly not kept up with inflation and, for example, homes, you know, in general. I mean, even in Kuala Lumpur, I mean, Melbourne, you know, has just gone gangbusters. So, you know, we need to acknowledge that it is harder these days. Mm-hmm. And so just because you don't have a house, for example, you know, not to be too hard on yourself, I guess the messages really here are one of delaying gratification. Mm-hmm. So if it's an option between getting out of university and buying a brand new car and going all out on larger rims and a better sound system versus a second-hand car that gets you around while you store this wealth, accumulate, yes, par down any debt you have, and then consume later. But the whole world is quite the opposite. We've had GFC. We're going to have GFC Mark II at some point very soon because we've not learnt our lessons.
I suppose it's also lifestyle in terms of probably peer pressure, social media pressure in a sense. When you see people spending, you know, lavishly on their food, but you don't quite know where you stand, right? Because if you're earning, let's say, in a lower tier or even average sort of salary, you shouldn't be going after 4 or 5-star sort of meals. That's crazy, right?
Yeah, and 15 ringgit coffee.
Yeah,
that's
correct.
Always an ongoing question that I have. And one of the chapters in the book says, you know, be selective with your peer, with your circle.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends if everyone else is driving imported cars and, you know, here you are feeling a bit behind because you're driving a second-hand local car. That shouldn't be a factor because at the end of the day, you know your capabilities.
People should put that as secondary, right? At the end of the day, you need to look for yourself, look after yourself and know what you can handle, not wear a hat bigger than your head.
Yeah, and then have other people, you're still driving this car or why are you buying this? You should buy that one that has a better this and that and seeing it on social media. Oh, I want that one too. So there are a lot of things that need to be changed, but, you know, we're optimistic. I mean,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure something can be done.
So, you know, very interesting topic, right? Financial planning and all that. Would you be keen on writing an entire book on this area, or by any chance?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah, I thought about that. And actually, I've put, you know, pen to paper in that regard. And I thought, though, you know, I'm an engineer by trade, you know, business degree as well, majored in, you know, law and finance. So I feel like there's some basis of some credibility for that, but I don't have a financial planning, you know, certificate, for example. So I just want to test the waters perhaps with the local publishers and see whether someone with you know, our collective backgrounds, you know, would be worthy of a book of that nature. But yeah, I'd love to. I think it's great.
In my line of work, we have guests coming to the studio from time the time talking about financial planning, and we're still harping on the same issue about how much money do you have to retire, and apparently the ones we have in EPF is not enough if you maintain the same lifestyle that you had when you were working. So again, diversifying your portfolio and diversifying your wealth, having a passive income, that is somewhat still an alien concept to a group of people, and we want to change that.
Very good. Okay, so would you say the topics covered in the book were based on both your personal experiences?
not me per se, but I've seen a lot of things. People have shared a lot of things with me. Names changed, of course. but yeah, it's happening all around us here in the country, growing up, you know, relatives, friends, best friends, close friends. So those were based on true encounters. Jason?
Certainly in my case, I don't think I can think of a chapter where there isn't something that I have personally gone through and just given my time on the planet have kind of seen confirmed by seeing examples around me. Finance, I've really got a finance, you know, head, so a lot of that stuff is just really at my fingertips, especially things like my first real encounter with needing to take control of things a bit more was with my accountant. You know, when my personal financial situation started to get a little bit more complex, I noticed that, you know, something just didn't seem right. And once I took the time to dig in more, I realised, well, wow, you know, there's just a lot of money that's been left on the table and I'm not having that. So it was two-pronged. Educate myself first. Realise that the accountant needed to be changed. And so, you know, don't feel like just because your parents use that accountant or your friend said you should use this particular person that you shouldn't do your own due diligence.
So being authors yourself, are there also people that you look up to, especially around the area of self-help, self-improvement? If you can share with our audience and who, you know, could that possibly be?
Yeah, well, for me, I spend most of my free time in the self-help section. So, you know, I'd need to say someone like, you know, Tony or Anthony Robbins. That said, though, I'm more a supporter of the game, right? You know, I'm less likely to support a team than just support the game. So in the same case here, I like picking up anything. I'm actually a big fan of biographies, to be honest, because that's where you just hopefully get, you know, warts and all. And so I really don't care what area of life or profession they've come from. It's just a great source of lessons. In my case, growing up in the athletics and soccer field, I love sporting greats. And sometimes, you know, those that got close but didn't quite make it, and just listening to the trials and tribulations that they went through. Don't forget, some of life's bad experiences can also be a great teacher. So, you know, honestly, I'll pick up anything.
Yourself, Dalia?
I write novels too. So, of course, my preference would be the authors who write novels. But Anthony Robbins would be also one of the main choices because he's brutally honest when it comes to finance, when it comes to relationships. I like Sherry Argov, Sophie Kinsella, of course, Jane Green. These are, every time they produce something or they publish something, it would end up on my shelf.
Okay, great. So finally, if you can summarize a key takeaway from this book, Lessons Beyond the Classroom, what would that be? Probably just enlighten our audience this morning.
Yeah, listen, this book, as we've tried to get across, comes from a neutral place. We've tried to write it as though the reasonable person has written it. So that means that you can come into this book, picking this book up, with whatever set of lenses that you're looking through to view the world. This book isn't meant to change a perspective, or if it does get a bit prickly, great. You know, it's not me speaking, but, you know, this is physics. You know, we all need a bit of friction to move forward. So if anything that you're reading does hit a nerve, well, you know, let's put the mirror on ourselves and just explore, take the time to explore what that might mean, you know, in the context of how behaviours might change. You know, and I guess, you know, in summary, you know, take the time to learn to seek the truth for yourself.
Yeah, and I think it falls nicely with the segment's name, Raise Your Game, because the things that we encounter day to day and the frustrations that we have from day to day when you go into an organization and things aren't moving and the same excuse will be given, or the system's down, or that's how it is here, that's just how we do things. It's okay to question those things to get a more desirable outcome. Learning to take no for an answer when, you know, you have a certain goal in life. And making some changes when you feel like you're in a rut or life is at a plateau right now, and you're starting. We have this from time to time. It's just human to question things. Why am I not happy with, you know, relationships? Why am I not happy with my financial, especially financial situations? But I think the most important thing that people should take away from this book is the ability to be honest with themselves, because, you know, it's already, the things are already pointed out in the book. Maybe you should look at that or that thing or that aspect. expect, but they would have to be, you know, honest enough to say, ooh, maybe that needs to be tweaked a little.
Thank you very much, Zaleha and Jason.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, for sharing on lessons beyond the classroom. It's certainly nice to hear the sharing of your experiences or even experiences of others through the book, then to learn the hard way personally. So I've been speaking to the authors of Lessons Beyond the Classroom, Zaleha Kairin and Jason Bork. Feel free to grab this book, a definite easy read, I would say. And if you missed part of this interview, fret not, head on down to our website, bfm.my, to download the podcast, or you can search for it on the BFM mobile app, available on the App Store and on Google Play. I'm Jermaine V, and you've been listening to Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.